This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina once again under fire for drawing legislative districts based on race. The U.S. Supreme Court agreed with a lower court ruling that found 28 legislative districts in North Carolina were gerrymandered to deliberately dilute the vote of African Americans. Now a three-judge panel is working on the next step, like when and how the state will redraw these unconstitutional districts. Meanwhile, North Carolina House approved a bill that will actually make it easier to carry concealed handguns in this state, and that bill now moves to the Senate. Here to talk about that and more is WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery. Welcome, Jeff.
Good to be with you, Frank.
Let's talk about that redistricting ruling. The Supreme Court ruled that legislative districts this time were gerrymandered. Tell us about that.
28 of them, as you mentioned. This is out of 170 seats at the General Assembly. And when you think about this as a puzzle, and that's what these maps are, they are puzzle pieces. When you change 28 of them, effectively, you're going to change many more. So when new maps are drawn, it could affect upwards of 110 or 120 different seats. And that, of course, has big political implications in a state where there are more and more people and in a state where there are supermajorities of Republicans. So where things stand right now is that this three-judge panel who struck down these maps, the remedy or the timeline is before them. They have not issued this yet. They said on Friday that they will act quickly. When they do, and there are a couple of different things that they will weigh in on, but they're going to, we expect, issue a schedule, and we'll get some more clarity as to when maps will come. They could be, you know, requested. The legislature could be told that they have to produce these maps, pass these maps in short order, or there could be a longer timetable. And that's important as we think about whether or not there will be slim chance of this, but whether or not there will be special elections this year or during the typical legislative election in 2018, there will be new maps, but it's a question of when.
Well, and let's talk about the political urgency of this, because you have people in office today who are residing in and were elected from unconstitutional districts. I mean, this calls into question the validity of everything they've done to some extent, but also the urgency of changing things and making it right. Governor Cooper has called for a special session to get those things redrawn. Talk about the political drama there.
Last week, the governor, Democrat, of course, Roy Cooper, called for the special session. A day later, lawmakers voted not to go into special session. They said that this is outside of his constitutional purview. But that has not stopped the governor or other folks from continuing to sound the alarm and making noise of this in terms of this is, in the governor's words, this is an unconstitutional legislature. And this is something that I don't expect we're going to hear him stop saying until new maps are drawn. And just to that point, they are making the argument that the maps that have been drawn, the laws that have come out of this building over the last 5 years, are all flawed. It's a house of cards, if you will, because it was built on something. It was founded on maps that have since been deemed illegal. So the governor, he called for the special session last week. Yesterday, he renewed the call for the legislature not to pass anything further, not to do these maps immediately. On another note, the NAACP is scheduled to be here, Reverend William Barber, today at 2 o'clock to offer a cease and desist letter. They're asking, and again, this is the politics of it, but they're asking the legislature to stop from doing any activities until new maps are drawn. Now, the lawmakers ignored the governor. I would expect them to also ignore the NAACP. But these conversations and these calls continue to put pressure on the legislature, and we'll see, you know, when new maps, when something comes about from all this.
Right. Again, going back to that three-judge panel that should issue something, and they say fairly soon, so we'll see what happens there. Well, let us move on. Another contentious issue at the Capitol right now is a bill that would limit the permit requirements for concealed handguns. Tell us more about that one.
I'm going to try to draw a line from the issue we were just talking about, and hopefully I can articulate this well. What happens when you have large majorities in a chamber is you get larger and larger numbers, right, of Democrats, or in this instance, recent times here, Republicans. And when you chat with strategists and political experts and you think about the North Carolina House, there are so many Republicans, 74 of them, in fact, that you get a larger, more diverse set of thoughts and ideologies and political policy aspirations. So some of the folks that I've chatted with, political types and press types who have been in this building for a long time, talk about the proposals that we've seen and some of the proposals that have gained a lot of media attention and are really controversial do come out of the fact that there are so many Republicans in this moment in the North Carolina House. So this is a bill that so current law requires concealed carry, people who have concealed carry to apply for a permit, that they have to be 21 years old and they have to complete firearm safety in order to get that concealed carry permit. This bill that is moving through the House, that's a big, diverse Republican caucus, not to hammer home the point too harshly. This bill would drop the age threshold from 21 to 18. It would eliminate concealed carry permits for adults that are not prohibited from owning firearms. And you could conceal carry in places where you can open carry, meaning you could have a loaded gun in a purse or on your person, but that is not visible to folks. And the proposal would eliminate that firearm safety training as well. And as you can imagine, this is a bill that has received a lot of criticism. And we should note, not just from progressives or liberals, but a lot of sheriffs have come out in opposition to this bill. The Fraternal Order of Police, which rarely takes stances on bills, they've come out against this, as have a number of sheriffs, law enforcement folks throughout the state that say that there's no need for this and it is risky. There's some potentially some dangers attached to this.
Well, like being able to carry a gun into a courtroom, or being able to carry a gun into the North Carolina legislature.
The legislative building, yes. Yeah. This bill would also do those two things.
All right. So as you say, law enforcement opposed to this, and in fact, it didn't win. As you, back to your point, there's more diversity among Republicans since there are more of them. Not exactly a straight party line vote. There's some pushback back among Republicans, again, because law enforcement is not behind making it easier to hide guns. One of the leading causes of death in America is not opioid addiction and not terrorism, but in fact, other Americans with guns. This was pointed out in the argument, and in fact, did get even some Republican pushback, right?
I believe there were 9 Republicans, maybe 10, who voted against this. I'm not looking at the vote count, but there were a number of Republicans that voted against this. They joined all the Democrats in the North Carolina House. That's important because while this did advance out of the chamber, it didn't advance with the requisite 3/5 support. And that's an important fraction because that's the veto-proof majority. So as we think about this moving forward, and there's some political calculus as to whether or not the Senate takes it up and if, in fact, it moves forward and the governor would veto it. But as of right now in the House, there are not enough votes to override this measure, which gives its future forecast. It's unclear what happens from here.
Yeah, let's talk more about the Senate, because sure. As you suggested, there's not even a sense of that there is any urgency in the Senate to even take this thing up. Am I right?
No, sir. No urgency that I have caught wind of. The Senate, mind you, it is a smaller body. It's only 50 lawmakers. 34 of them are Republicans. There is not as much support and fervor and passion for Second Amendment rights issues in the Senate as there is in the House. So I don't think this is something that's going to move through the Senate in short order. You have to wonder if they're going to take it up at all, because, as we just mentioned, let's say they do take it up. Then it goes on to the governor. He hasn't explicitly said, Governor Cooper, that he would veto this, but he's touched on it. He's danced around the edges a little bit. I think my expectation is that he would veto this. And if you're the legislature and you think about this other big picture issue we've spent a lot of time talking about, which is separation of powers, and they've wanted the governor to be as weak as possible. So if this were to move through the Senate, you send it to the governor and he vetoes it, and it comes back over to this building and they can't override it, what have you just done? You've effectively made the governor look stronger. And that's certainly something they don't want to do around here.
Let's take a look at another story. The Charlotte Observer did an investigative piece. We had those reporters on this show as well. But the investigative piece came out of the Charlotte Observer that took a look at corruption within the prison system. And apparently there's some political fallout there. Tell us more.
There is. This was a 5-part series from The Observer. It was a strong piece or pieces of journalism. They found a lot of different things. They've shined a light on some issues within the correctional the corrections department in the state. And, you know, they're looking at officers who were hired and who had histories of violence and unethical behavior elsewhere. And this has generated some talk at the legislature. Senator Berger said earlier this week that he thinks it's fairly clear, quoting here, it's fairly clear that at least for some folks, they either haven't done the background checks or they've ignored what was there, close quote. And, you know, that's Senator Berger. That's the most powerful man in North Carolina politics. Speaker Tim Moore has also come out and he said that he called this series, some of the findings, shocking and intolerable. So there hasn't been, you know, a specific call or a specific message from lawmakers yet about what might transpire. But I would expect to see some more traction on this because of what was exposed in this series.
All right. Finally, the battle of the budget, not over yet. How are negotiations going between the House and the Senate?
I've chatted with a couple of lawmakers today, as well as some staff members. It sounds like it's going to the corner offices, which means the budget writers and the negotiators have done what they can, and the rest of the negotiations will take place between Speaker Tim Moore and Senate Leader Phil Berger. The big question is taxes, because the two chambers were separated by $650 million. And when I've asked a couple of lawmakers about this, they've told me that no middle ground has been found yet. And the tax issues are going to head to Berger and Moore and their staffs, and they're going to have to really hash that out. And the key issue here is whether or not the Senate wants to drop corporate and individual income tax rates. The House does not have an appetite for that, has not until this point. They want to raise the standard deduction, but make no other really sweeping tax changes. So everybody seems to agree that they're going to reach a compromise by the beginning of next week, but there is still this tax piece that they have to work through.
Jeff Tiberi, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jeff Tiberi, WUNC Capital Bureau Chief, and you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up on the next Movies on the Radio, we're going to talk with film experts Laura Boys and Marcia Gordon about the best and worst superhero movies, and you can join that show, be part of it by emailing us at sot@wunc.org or tweet us at #SOTMovie and tell us your favorite or least favorite superhero movie. Get you on the radio. Just ahead, we'll meet the man behind the acclaimed book Guantanamo Diaries on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.